Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, and always respectfully. So it's legislative season down in Olympia, and there's plenty of politics going on right here in good old Tacoma as well, so let's talk about that today. One of my favorite quotes goes something like this: "No one's life or property is safe when the legislature is in session." So I think when that quote was first made, it was more like taxes are going to be raised or there's going to be restrictions put on personal property or maybe a seizure or something like that. Now we have kind of a newer meaning, and while it's new, it still follows that theme that dangerous things can come out of the legislature. And so right now I'm thinking about stuff related to the environment and to the climate, of course. And it's not only dangerous things come out, but helpful things get stopped. So it's up to us to make sure that we're paying attention to what's going on. One of the most common things people wonder about in terms of thinking, okay, what can I do, is what they can do as individuals. And you know, what we do as individuals, I'm talking about using less energy, basically, creating fewer fossil fuel emissions and stuff related to that. While that's important, that's only a very small part of it. I think the value, more likely, is to influence others and also to help to keep us aware of what's going on in the environment, where it's so easy to just kind of look the other way and go about what I would call normal old affluent American lifestyle. And affluent compared to world standards, not necessarily just at home here. Even if we have modest means, we're affluent by world standards. The most important thing we can do is to be politically engaged, and that's part of what I'm going to be talking about today. And there's an aspect of that also, and I'm paraphrasing somebody else's quote here, but the silent voice is the least effective voice. So sometimes I think I can worry, okay, well, I'm just one small voice, and I'm not that smart, I don't know that much, and there's a lot of other folks that know more than I do. That's a way of shutting myself up, and when I'm silent, I'm not effective at all. Actually, I think in a lot of ways, just a layperson's commentary, even if it's not that fluent, smart, together, whatever, can be more effective than a slick presentation from somebody who does the work as a profession. I'm thinking about doing a demonstration or a march. Isn't it the hand-lettered signs on cardboard that are the most effective, that you think are the most sincere? And I think the same thing is true when we make comments about legislation or other political issues. Our everyday kind of personal message is far more important than a really slick together message. So don't be deterred. And remember, the silent voice is the one that's the least effective. And related to that is they, and by them I mean the corporations, the money people, the CEOs that make hundreds of times more than their workers do, they're counting on us being silent. They know that when they propose a project or try to stop legislation or start legislation, that the majority of Americans are going to be silent in the face of that. In a way, that's good news. It means your voice is leveraged. When you do say something, generally speaking, your legislators are going to pay attention to it. So bottom line, raise your voice, be politically active. It's not that tough. And I'll have some guidance later on in the program about how you can make yourself heard with not a whole lot of energy expended. So let's take a look right here in Tacoma at something that's going on. I think this is really important. It's out in the Tide Flats. There is a company called Seaport. They've got some fossil fuel storage tanks out there on the Hylabos Waterway. If you drive by Marine Drive that way, you've seen them plenty of times, big white tanks there that store fossil fuels, oils, I believe. So they have a proposal to destroy those tanks and the related stuff, refinery equipment, so on and so forth. And they're going to install new storage tanks and a containment system, some wastewater and stormwater improvements and so on. Sounds, well, it could be good. I mean, we're all in favor of improving stormwater, wastewater treatment and so on. Of course, there wouldn't be any wastewater there if it wasn't for them being there in the first place. The current storage capacity in that facility is about 15,000 barrels. And while they're talking about this being a modernization project, they're going to replace those 15,000 barrels, at least they're proposing, with 181,000 barrels of storage. That's a 12-fold increase. So really, if they were being honest, they wouldn't call it a modernization project. They'd call it an expansion project. And of course, modernization sounds better than expansion. One of the things that's true is corporations are masters at deception. They have a lot of very smart people who understand how words work and how people perceive words, and that's why they do things like take an expansion project like this and call it a modernization project, and hey, who isn't for stormwater improvement? Well, fortunately, it's been determined that this project does require an environmental impact statement, which does give us as ordinary folks some form of letting our thoughts be known. So let's take a look at that. In calling for an environmental impact statement, several items were referred to, and here are some of them. The emergency response, something goes wrong there. How is that going to be responded to emergency-wise, like a fire or a leak? Risks to public safety, which is related to that. Transportation for emergency access, spill prevention, response to spills, air quality. But here's the big one, for me anyway. They're going to include the life cycle greenhouse gas emissions from the additional products to be stored on the site. We are seeing the notion of what's the impact on greenhouse gas emissions showing up more and more as projects are proposed and permits are sought and environmental impact statements are called for. And I gotta say, it's about time. You know, local impacts of a project are one thing, like emissions or leaks or something like that. But we're on a slow-moving train wreck here as far as climate change is concerned. We know that the key culprit in climate change is fossil fuel emissions. So it's right and appropriate that every project that's proposed should be looked at through the lens of what's the impact on the greenhouse gas emissions from that project. Some time ago, I saw an old line drawing of the tide flats prior to the start of industrialization, back maybe 1870, something like that. At that time, the tide flats were an amazing and beautiful ecosystem. Now it's a horrid, ugly, polluted mess that is friendly to neither the natural order of things nor to us. Of course, corporations are always talking about jobs. The reality is their focus is on making a profit. It's not on creating jobs, but they know if they say, we want to do this new project so we can improve our profits, people aren't going to be too impressed. But if they say, hey, we're going to create some jobs, then people may listen to them. Yeah, there are jobs associated with this project. There's no doubt about that. But you know, what we really need to be doing is thoughtfully transitioning to jobs that are in harmony with the environment that we need for our species' survival, not ones that are in opposition to our survival. And projects like this, although only a small part of it, take their place with the rest of these kinds of projects around the world to create a serious and ongoing threat towards our ecological future. And without an ecology, we don't have any future. Most of all, we don't want to be building new and additional fossil fuel infrastructure that the owners will be wanting to use for the next 40 or 50 years, and which will be contributing to fossil fuel pollution for the entire lifetime of those projects. So my understanding is that comments are going to be taken on this project up until February 25, and there's going to be specific places where you can make your comments either at a Zoom meeting or via email or phone call. I'll have show notes, and I'll give you a reference to those show notes at the end of this program that you can go to and figure out how you can make a comment. I just recently made a comment. Took me about 10 minutes to let my voice be known that I oppose this project and to explain in a few words why I oppose it. So it's no big deal. You can do it. It's not going to take much time. Okay, let's wander on down towards Olympia and see what's going on with the legislature there, which is in session, of course. A few bills that I'm going to highlight today. Let's start off with a bill called the Healthy Environment for All Act, cleverly acronymed the HEAL Act, H-E-A-L, and it's Senate Bill 5141. Don't bother about writing this stuff down. I'll have links in the show notes. So here's the thought, big picture, behind the HEAL Act. That is that the state does lots of stuff, but there's nothing really that requires the state to pay attention to environmental justice issues as they make those various decisions. And the HEAL Act basically inserts a requirement to pay attention to entire environmental justice issues as the state acts. So just a couple of thoughts about environmental justice. The reality is that people who are in overburdened communities, communities of folks with not a lot in the way of financial resources, often folks who are parts of minority groups or who have language challenges, the largely disenfranchised in our society, but at the same time, folks that we rely on deeply for things like taking care of our lawns, building our houses, harvesting our fruit and vegetables, doing jobs that a lot of folks wouldn't want to do themselves. Because they are relatively poor, they live in areas that more affluent people don't want to live in, and that's areas along freeways or close to industrial sites, or they work in industries that have got lots of environmental challenges like agriculture with the pesticides and fertilizers and things like that that aren't good for people's health. So here's a simple mind experiment that can illustrate what I'm talking about. Let's just say we've got a 5-year-old child who's born into poverty and he's dealing with environmental issues that have been a part of making other people wealthy. Is that fair? Most people would say no. The HEAL Act would take some steps toward addressing those kinds of inequities, those kinds of unfairness. And the reality also is if we pay more attention to these communities that are suffering more than the general population from environmental pollution, is that things get better for everybody. Healthcare costs go down, people have better careers, children grow up with better educations and better able to contribute to our overall society. So a good deal all the way around to take care of folks that are on the bottom rung of the environmental ladder, so to speak. Okay, let's talk briefly about a low carbon fuel standard. There's a bill, House Bill 1091. Once again, I'll have a link to that. And we've talked about this a bit before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Just very simply to state that it's going to limit gas and diesel emissions to 10% below 2017 levels by 2028 and by 20% by 2035. Transportation is the number one source of environmental pollution in our area, so reducing the pollution from fuels would be a step forward. Not only would we reduce the pollution from those fuels, but it would start making cleaner sources of energy more attractive. And there's a jobs issue here too. Right now we're losing clean fuel jobs to California and Oregon. Both those states have a clean fuel standard. We don't. And there's folks who've wanted to start manufacturing of clean fuels here in the state of Washington, but they haven't because there's no clean fuel standard here. So important to get that bill passed finally. It has passed out of a House committee, so it does have a chance this session. Okay, another couple bills. There's companion bills in the House and the Senate, House Bill 1204 and Senate Bill 5256. This is the Clean Cars 2030 bill. In simplest terms, what this bill or these bills are intended to do is to require that all new vehicles sold in the state of Washington 2030 and after need to be non-fossil fuel burning vehicles. So that could be electric vehicles or hydrogen powered vehicles. We're already on our way towards electric vehicles taking precedence over internal combustion engines, but this bill would clear the way, increase investor confidence. Yeah, electric vehicles are going to be a big part of Washington State, and it's going to be relatively fast. And so the implementation of required infrastructure, the encouraging of dealerships to take on more electric vehicles, possibly even the direct sale of electric vehicles right from the manufacturer, this bill would be a great step towards making all those things happen and creating a cleaner environment from our transportation system. And talking about all this stuff, we can't lose sight of the fact that what we're talking about is our environmental future, and these are all steps towards creating a livable future for us. The science is clear that fossil fuel combustion is a primary cause of climate change. It's also a very significant cause of air pollution in terms of particulate matter, nitrous oxide, and such bad things as that. There's a website called TerraPass.com. I'll have a link for that. That will allow you to compare footprints of various vehicles. I have a 2018 Leaf, so I compared that to a Ford 150, F-150, one of the smaller ones, apples to apples in terms of usage, year purchased, place operated, so on and so forth. So my Leaf will produce 1,145 pounds of carbon dioxide per year. That smaller Ford F-150 will produce 5,770 pounds, so five times bigger carbon footprint than my Leaf. So electrifying our transportation system is a significant step forward in reducing our fossil fuel emissions. So that's a quick look at what's going on locally and in the state. There's lots of other stuff, easy to get connected, figure it out, and allow your voice to be heard. I'll have links for various stuff at ccltacoma.org. The CCL part stands for Citizens Climate Lobby. It's a good outfit. Check it out. You can also contact me via email anytime, John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Put your comments on the air whenever it's appropriate. Okay, that's it for today. Here I am reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.